inspiring and equipping you to live the life you're destined to live. This is the Ascend Men podcast. Last week you had guest presenter Rob Allen. Next week you'll experience our first female host. But today, in the interviewing seat, you've got Josh Darley.
Today we have Martin Frost, CBE, who is a businessman and entrepreneur responsible for the startup and scale-up of several highly successful global technology businesses. He is a devoted husband to Ali, with whom he shares a love of caravanning and B-rated Hollywood movies, I think Father of the Bride and Kindergarten Cop. Graduating from Cambridge reading history, he returned to Manchester and qualified as an accountant working with broad-based engineering firms. And joining the environmental services side of Simon Engineering, he spent time in France and the USA, where he learned to write software, and more importantly, where his daughter Hannah was born. He is a co-founder of CMR Surgical, one of the UK's leading medical devices startups, developing the next generation system for robotically assisted minimal access surgery, where he raised over £250 million for the company's development. He was known for putting the Frosty into Frost by walking around the office in a snowman outfit at Christmas and biking to various offices across Cambridge, come rain or shine. Prior to founding CMR Surgical, Martin was CEO and CFO of Sygentia PLC. Under his leadership there, he developed and rolled out M-Pesa, the leading mobile money platform in the world. For all of this, Martin won the Disruptor Award in the EY Entrepreneur of the Year 2019 UK Awards. Since leaving CMR, Martin has engaged in starting and scaling up companies within the spectrum of fast charge batteries, electric motors, digital pathology, and sensors. And in 2020, he was awarded a CBE in the Queen's Birthday Honours for services to robotics and British industry. Last but not least, Martin is a trustee of Peak Vision, whose mission is vision and eye health for all. And with Ali, previously belonged to the C3 Cambridge family, where Martin served as a trustee and as a youth leader. And today we are thrilled to have him on the Ascend podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Joshua. Lovely to be here. Expect me to be as rude to you as you're about to be to me.
Martin, quick fire questions. Something that's happened on every one of these episodes so far. Caravanning in northern Spain or Christmas in the Caribbean?
Northern Spain, campervanning.
Lindsay Lohan's Parent Trap or Anne Hathaway's Princess Diaries?
Ooh, know them both only too well. Recently watched both. Parent Trap.
Recently watched both. Stephen Schwartz musical Wicked or Andrew Lloyd Webber's musical Joseph?
No, Wicked every time.
There's no competition.
I'll break into song soon. Well, we can give that a try if you like later.
There might be some singing on this podcast. I don't know if that's the first time. And final question, best day of your life?
Getting married, which is quite a while ago now.
How many years ago was that?
So 1990.
So I'm sure we'll hear about family life later. Martin, I'm grateful to be doing this. We share a love of singing in the office to embarrass people, Ford Fiestas, ankle surgeons, and the Lord. So we've got lots to talk about. This is part of our entrepreneur series.
Mm.
And I wonder if we can just kick off perhaps with your thoughts on your career as an entrepreneur. Has it always been like that? Is it something that you've come to? And we'll take it from there.
I didn't know what to do when I left university, having read history. In truth, not a lot of history, some history. Went into finance and accounting because I didn't really know what else to do. Discovered I was quite poor at that initially. Ultimately got better. And found, really when I look back on it, was very fortunate to learn almost, you know, I didn't know this, and certainly in the business I was working in didn't know this, but I was able to pick up and write quite a suite of software in terms of executive management information systems for Simon Engineering in the 80s. And that gave me tools alongside my finance tool you know, the software writing tool. I always enjoyed languages, so that meant that they sent me to France, Belgium, and then ultimately the States, where our daughter was born, to roll that out and to use that tool to run, manage financial systems within a mini conglomerate business. That fascinated me. Yeah, using finance and other IT systems as a tool to understand and grow businesses. Just as a brief history, I was then brought back to the UK. Ultimately, worked in a business called GC Marconi, the last days of Arnold Weinstock's reign in GC Marconi, very large business, manufacturing business, and was hired into one of Cambridge's technology consulting businesses in the late 90s. Those businesses really are the glue that holds Cambridge together. They're spoken about very little, actually, but they are precious jewels in the Cambridge crown. And I was lucky enough to be initially finance director and then ran a business called Sagentia, became Science Group, was listed on the stock exchange. And we did lots of breakthrough engineering product development for companies all over the world, as well as developed our own intellectual property, which we commercialized. And to be honest, that was really the equivalent of 300 very clever engineers and scientists and me not being an engineer or a scientist doing that. And I got a real love of working out what you could do with interesting technology, and realizing then that I had a real love and affinity with folk trying to commercialize breakthrough science and technology, with then the finance skills that I'd learned and an ability to blag my way into most situations. That really took me out then of Sagentia Science Group into working in the more broader entrepreneurship area, which has been great fun.
And I heard you say in another forum about your time at GC Marconi, I think you used the words, it was culture inhibiting. And maybe at the start of our time together, could you just talk a little bit about the importance of culture for you?
I think culture is vitally important. You know, we have one life, and we get some choice in how to spend our time. And I've always liked to work in businesses that believe in the possible, that invest in young people that are interested in advancing the careers of young people, whether they be in or outside of those businesses. You know, GC Marconi, as it was run under Weinstock, was a very well-run, well-organized, well-structured business. All words that don't well describe me: organized, structured, well-run. So I've been very fortunate to work alongside people who want to change things up. I always think that in our world at the moment, our lives and the world is an uncertain place to be. That's a natural place for an entrepreneur to want to build business. You know, I think the fallacy sometimes is that we believe that things are certain around us. Actually, things aren't. And actually, uncertainty is the very thing that gives us opportunity. Opportunity to create new businesses, to change the landscape of businesses we see around ourselves. And the pace of change around us is faster than it's ever been now. You know, the pace of innovation, pace of breakthrough science, all of those things are moving quite quickly now. So I think as a business person, you really have to be able to adapt very quickly to new paradigms and very quickly work out potential product market fit for new technologies. That's where the fun is, as much as working out where the teams are that you can find to put together to address those opportunities. Because back to the culture question you asked at the beginning, whether something succeeds or not has probably more to do with the quality of the people and the way in which an organization is run than actually the technology. If you find the right people in the right team, you can solve, certainly around Cambridge, we can solve most of the technical product issues. Very hard to rebuild teams.
So I was reminded as I was preparing for this, an email that you sent me in 2019 saying, Josh, we've hit 250 people at CMR Surgical, and I would like to speak to every single one of them over the coming months and give them 12 minutes. Each. And Martin, there are a number of people who still at CMR have left CMR who remember that. I just wonder, what was the importance of doing that on top of what we've just discussed?
There are lots of books you can read on organizational change and management structures and efficiency of those structures. But I think as a leader, as a co-founder of the business, how can you possibly understand what, you know, the spirit behind a business unless you meet the people who started the business? I mean, that's one answer to it. A better answer actually is, how am I, you know, as the leader of the business, how am I actually going to understand how it feels like to work in the business unless you speak to everybody? Because you want to hear it directly from them, not through different organization lines of communication. You want to hear it directly, and you want to get to know them as people. Because I think people pick up very quickly whether you're interested in them as people or whether you're interested in them because of the job that they can do for the company, for you. I am interested in people. As you know, I'm fascinated by people, really interested in people's own stories. And it's so important, I think, to make that connection. My math probably wasn't so good at the time, so it was probably down to you to calculate how many minutes it was per person.
So being with people, and we've spoken about some of the businesses you've led and now founding, co-founding, investing in, lots of people. And I'm sure there are lots of people who come to you who you give half an hour to,
yep,
and you think, actually, no, that's not for me. What are you looking for?
I do try to talk to folk who ask. I think I read that of Steve Jobs, with whom I have a bit of a love-hate relationship, with the now deceased Steve Jobs. But I think one of the things he said is he was amazed when he was starting Apple, you know, he would pick up the phone to people and they would give him the time. And that's all we have. We just have time on this earth. So people trying to do breakthrough things, young people, deserve the time if you can give them the time. If you speak to Marcel Gerung, who is CEO of Cited, successful business commercializing a device to detect Barrett's esophagus, he will say to you, and I confess this with shame, he will say to me that he knew that we were onto something when, after 30 minutes, I took off my coat. I didn't realize I did this, but you know, I must have had my coat on just in case the meeting didn't go very well.
Ready to make a quick exit.
Make a quick exit. But I think what I'm looking for in that conversation, to be honest, is, number one, I want to have a proper conversation. It's got to be a human conversation, not a, these are the five bullets on my slides. It's got to be a conversation. And secondly, you know, if we're trying to start something, if they would like me to be part of something, if I would like to be part, them to be part of something I'm involved in, then I'm looking for both ambition and truth at the same time. And we know as entrepreneurs, you know, that's a careful line, the truth and entrepreneurship, because very often we need to imagine things that haven't yet come to be, but we believe that they will. But also you want to know that the idea is grounded in the art of the possible, not the impossible.
And you've spoken before about the importance of your mentors, Gordon Edge, Peter Hyde, Bob Pettigrew. And yeah. I guess, you know, sometimes we're blinded by our own ambition to that truth. So having those mentors in place.
I think, you know, it's not, yeah, you're in Cambridge today, and in the science part now, there are tens of thousands of people employed. It wasn't that long ago when the first folk made the first investment in the first building on the science park. You know, actually, within the context of UK innovation, that's all relatively recent history. And we owe those people a lot.
So having those strong mentors around you, engaging with people, how did you do that as you were growing your career? How did you identify them? How did you approach them?
Yeah, in retrospect, actually, I wish I'd asked for more help at times. But I was always drawn to people who had a sense of fun and were positive. And that's something I've applied to my own life. Yeah, as you know, I'm not averse to putting fancy dress on to get a cheap laugh. In fact, I'll do most things to get a cheap laugh.
I was just thinking about the turkey outfit that came out the Christmas after the snowman.
Yeah, Yeah.
Which had its own self-inflating battery pack.
I think what you're trying, look, I think you know that I'll do anything to get a smile out of people, but actually there is a genuine motivation behind that, which is that, you know, many of us engaged in the Cambridge science industries, we work very hard, we're very driven. Actually, when we're working, we're quite intense people. So actually, to give people an opportunity to be less intense, to have some fun, to take them out of themselves, that's all quite important. Because again, to massively generalize, very, very, very clever people, and there are many of them around in Cambridge, can be quite introverted. So again, to sort of take folk sort of out of themselves, you know, and a place where they surprise themselves.
So perhaps we can just stop the podcast for a second, and all those introverts who are listening in to Martin Frost and Joshua Darley, what is your favorite praise worship song at the moment?
Oh, I'm into For the Angels Sing Holy at the moment.
All right. All the introverts, wherever you are listening to this, maybe you're walking around the science park right now listening. And the angels cry, holy, all creation cries, holy. You are lifted high. Don't leave me hanging.
Holy, holy forever.
All right, introverts, we want to see the selfie of where you were when you were joining us singing Holy Forever. All right, well, that is what we need to do. We need to have some fun. And maybe you've been listening to this. You are driving your kids to school and you're just going to break out in praise and worship.
My wife just sent me a text to say, who am I singing to?
To the thousands of men listening to this podcast. Martin, you spoke about the sense of fun, which we've seen. And how about the positivity? Because there must be some mornings or some situations in life where you don't want to come in positive. Your cycle to work or your drive to work. Just explain about that.
Yeah. I think both with a Christian hat on and a worldly hat on, we've got so much to be thankful for and positive about. In terms of our faith, to know that we are saved, I think, in a world of uncertainty, gives us the ultimate certainty. And I think that is tremendously important. I think in terms of being positive in the workplace, I think as much as anything else, it's a decision. It's as hard or as easy as a decision. And I think when you're leading hundreds of people, I think leading them strongly and positively is tremendously important, when we can't know in advance whether something we're going to do is absolutely going to work. If we did, then there wouldn't be any new business. That is why new businesses are created. That is why entrepreneurs exist, because we don't know. But you give people the best chance of success by believing that you are going to succeed. And I think also, all of us also experience difficulties in our lives. You know, Ali and I have had a lot of difficulty with really poor health at times, poor mental health. And that has been a struggle. And I think that brings persistence out of those difficulties. And through that persistence, I think to build that into actually applying that persistence then in the context of a new business, trying to do something difficult, I think that brings many, many benefits.
So are there any top tips for ensuring that you turn up positive?
Tips, what top tips? It won't surprise you to know, you would find me singing to myself on my bike in my little cubby hole in the office. Not necessarily "And the Angels Sing," but it might be some ridiculous modern rocking frog song or something.
The Crazy Frog.
Crazy Frog, yeah, that's the one. Because I think it changes your mood.
Yeah, the importance of turning up positive, ready to influence and inspire your colleagues.
I think that's very important. But I think also you get that from everybody in the organisation. It doesn't matter what jobs people do. As you know, I used to have huge fun. I think there were at least a couple of days where I volunteered to work on reception. I'm not sure our visitors were well treated or well received on those days, but yeah, I loved it. I got to know the other folk who worked on reception very well, and they got to know how incapable I was.
So clearly, you go into businesses you're loved and you bring such a joy. Tell me, have there been moments when you have realized, oh, actually, I got it wrong. This is not the co-founder for me, or this is not the VC for me. And how did that play out?
Yeah. Yes, I think this is the finance part of my brain. I like people, but also I think in numbers. And if you think about it, I was CEO of CMR for about 6 years, I think. 8 years, if you count it from when we actually had the idea to do it. 8 years, actually, of a startup that grows that quickly is quite a lot, actually, quite a long time, because you need different skills as you go from zero to 300, 400 people. And I think that's true of most people. You know, when we hire people, when we recruit people, we don't know how they are going to develop. And you can't assume that the person who is best at that thing who we're going to recruit today is going to be the best at doing that job in 5-6 years' time. And how are you going to deal with it? Because I'm a people person, I don't like saying difficult things to people who I like. But I have discovered, I did discover that if I have a relationship with those people, then neither do I duck the conversation. I will have the conversation as opposed to hide behind HR people or lawyers. And very often, there might be people on this podcast who have heard a line from Martin Frost that says something along the lines of, you don't seem very happy here anymore. And then there's a deep intake of breath, and hopefully there's an honest conversation that follows. I think that's where the law has made things difficult, actually, because, you know, as we get bigger within a business, there are rules and laws to be followed. But it's a shame if that gets in the way of a human relationship with somebody who you've employed and valued.
And we've spoken about hiring well, and there's great thoughts on hiring well, but also what you're saying is firing well.
Yeah, and I think firing well comes with a honesty and actually an acknowledgement that, look, if somebody's become not the right person for the job anymore, that's one conversation. And actually, very likely they know that too. But if the business has made some mistakes and recruited the wrong person to start off with, or actually strategically made the wrong mistake in growing somewhere where it shouldn't, then of course the right thing to do is for the business to say it's made a mistake. And they're rectifying it, not pretend that it's anything other than that.
And just in practical terms then, for entrepreneurs listening to this, how do you support those people who you've had to exit? Is it, thanks very much, here's a gold watch, or is it, here's some extra salary?
Yeah. So if I had to have a very difficult conversation with somebody and I knew them and I thought it was going to be a shock for them, then what I would do is, of course, you find space in a room by yourselves with that person. But I think the critical thing is to treat them well. And by treating them well, that means making sure that you are clear what it is that's going on and what you want them to hear. So actually, I would write it down. If I was in the position where it was actually, there's not a good fit anymore between yourself and the organization, I would write those words down, because I know that my capability to babble unnecessarily is not going to be helpful to that person. So I would actually, in those situations, write it down, be very clear. And then I would stop and say very little else, which of course is unusual for me because I'm a talkative person. Because I think you make the situation a lot worse by saying a lot more. And then I would give the person space, take them through the process. But the key thing is your relationship with that person doesn't stop. I mean, there are lots of people at CMR and previous companies that I have a continuing good relationship with now, you know, notwithstanding the fact that we might have bought or not bought in those businesses. So The business decision is different from the human decision. The human decision is you want a relationship with this person that's going to endure. Both parties have got to want that, of course. But it's not to do with watches and it's not to do with cards. It's got to do with integrity and honesty.
And what I'm really gathering from discussing all of this with you is you really know yourself.
So it's very interesting you asked me this question. So yes, Ali, my wife, would call me quite a late developer. I mean, she is 7 years younger than me, and she probably says, you know, when I met you, you were about as mature as I was, and she was 16 when I met her, so I'm not sure what that tells you. But I did get to know myself quite well. And I was listening to actually another podcast the other day from somebody who works with people who are dying and works with lots of people who are dying. And they say, well, what are the sort of three or four things that you hear people say when they're dying? And number one was, I wish I had been the person I grew into in my adult life rather than lived a life to try and please other people. I think that's tremendously important. And there are lots of situations, you know, board meetings, you know, difficult situations with customers when you're tempted to become somebody who you aren't. And actually the truth is that people can tell.
So the success has come from being very authentic, knowing yourself.
Yeah, and being prepared to be challenged. You know, actually the other thing I like doing, I've always liked doing, is not gathering around me wherever it is in a business or a board or whatever. Don't surround yourself with people who are as bonkers as you are.
I did remember you once tell me, what is the point in hiring people who think exactly the same as you?
There was just no point. So I think creating an environment where people feel enabled, empowered, you know, encouraged to disagree, to say completely different things, but not to be threatened by it. That's really, really important. And the best boards achieve that.
And that comes back to this uncertainty risk, because we hire who we know, i.e. ourselves. But what you've been saying throughout is uncertainty risk. You have said previously that when you started on the journey of stepping out of consulting and being a CEO there, you didn't draw a salary for 2 years.
Yeah.
That is huge risk. How does your faith and your business join together in risk taking?
Good question. In the end, there are some certainties in life, death and taxes. I came to the conclusion when I was in my sort of 30s, early 40s, that actually uncertainty was the constant, therefore why not embrace it? And I'd seen M-Pesa, which is mobile money product, transform the lives of people in Kenya. You know, today, more than 20 million lives in Kenya, which has been fantastic. And we have that great opportunity in Cambridge and other places around the world. You know, we don't live that long, actually. So for us, as a family, we've always been very fortunate to have the things we have. We did earn no money for 2 years, which my wife and daughter remind me of and remember. But let's think about that risk for a minute. Did that mean that, yeah, I could always have gone and got a job? And I think when a lot of people think about the risk, they think, well, how can I possibly take that risk? And of course, I don't think people think about risk properly because, you know, what for talented people, what is the risk in around the economy that they work in that they're not going to find another job within 6 to 12 months? Actually, for most people who are capable, that risk is very low. The bigger risk is, do they believe they'll be able to cope with the uncertainty of navigating their idea, their new product, their technology? So it kind of comes down to confidence, actually.
I'm just thinking of those people who are listening to this, who've had that idea. You know, we say it's an overnight success, but really it's a 20-year in the making overnight success. The easy question would be to say, you know, what would you say to your 21-year-old self? Maybe we'll get that to that in a second. But what about those people in their 50s or 60s who are listening and they're thinking, you know, I still got time to start something and I want to jump into it. Can you just speak to those guys and women?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So yeah, I was a young at heart, but older founder of CMR Surgical. In 2014, I'd have been 51, I think. If you look at the age profile of most entrepreneurs, actually, typically it's either folk in their 20s or it's folk in their later years. You know, later being, I'll say, older than 50, and I'm older than 60 now. You know, you embrace the uncertainty, but you manage the risk. And managing the risk is actually all about very rational things. It's about who's on the journey with you. It's on what validation do you have of your idea or your product or your service. It's what support mechanism do you have around you. And people have to do it for the right reasons. You have to do it because you believe in the idea or the product. You can't do this because you believe that you will make an awful lot of money out of it, because statistically you won't. You know, if you look at the number of startups that succeed, it's a lot less than 50%. However, if you're in an ecosystem where there are literally hundreds of startups a year, which is the case around Cambridge, then what happens is businesses start, they grow, they either win or they lose. Look at a business called Ionica, for example, that was one of the large sort of telecom startups around Cambridge in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, that business in the end didn't succeed, but that business brought into Cambridge lots and lots of talented people who have then gone on to do something successful. CMI will be like that. CMI will have given birth to people's careers who will go and do something very special. So it's about a broader, wider picture, I think, rather than this particular thing is going to work and it's going to make me X amount of money. No, you're repositioning yourself in a different stream that's ultimately going to take you to a different place.
So that is for anyone, any age, who is thinking about this. And we'd love to end these podcasts with a challenge to all those who are listening. And I wonder if you could just give one piece of advice to someone who has had an idea, sitting on an idea. What would that be, just to kickstart this? Maybe it turns into a business, maybe it doesn't, but to get serious, what is that one thing that they can do to begin to on that journey?
I would go back to what I said earlier about Steve Jobs. So Steve Jobs said, you know, he never ever placed a call or a message to a relevant business person, entrepreneur in the ecosystem saying, you know, would you mind, you know, do you have 10 minutes? Do you have 15 minutes? I think everybody can do that. And you'll be surprised how many people will say, sure, I've got 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. And sharing an idea, sharing that journey always helps. In terms of the UK, today is as good a time as there has ever been to start a new business. And if you're fortunate to live in and around the Cambridge area, that is doubly true.
Well, I think because of this podcast, house prices have already increased 15% in the area as people are moving into Cambridge to join the Cambridge bubble. We have heard so much about purpose. You've led businesses that have had purpose and transformed their area. You just mentioned 20 million Kenyans. We have heard about identity, having that confidence and ensuring, I think you said, reposition into a different stream. How powerful. Martin, it's been so great to hear about what it has been to be an entrepreneur from you. And I know that I think you prefer the term businessman than entrepreneur, but what a varied career. And we are looking forward to continuing to follow your progress. And I'm sure 61 years old, that's the new 30. So there are lots more businesses, lots more awards. And next time we speak, it might be Sir Martin. So thank you very much. We are so grateful for your time and looking forward to following everything that's ahead.
Thanks, Josh. Take care.
That's it for this Ascend Men podcast. If you've enjoyed this content, please share it with a mate. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Together, we are stronger.